The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the 06010. Fantasy Focus.
Welcome to the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Field, Mike, and Stefania hanging out with you on a Wednesday. Stefania is back, and this is just a little, no one cares about this, but we have what we call an IFB. I think it stands for internal feedback. I'm not entirely sure. And right now, it sounds like I am inside of a car that sound system is broken. Everything sounds fuzzy in my ear right now. So it should be a riveting show. Stefania, welcome back. You had a nice trip to the West Coast.
Thank you. Yes. Minus the result. Everything else was great about being there. It was so fun to be at Levi's Stadium and have it look and feel like a real NFL stadium. Largest number of tickets distributed in 49ers regular season history.
Wow. Now,
to be fair, Levi's Stadium can accommodate more than Candlestick could. But that just goes to show you, this was the first game at the new stadium where it really had the energy of like home field advantage. And of course, the Niners and Seahawks always play each other tough, but you heard Russell Wilson say craziest game he's ever been a part of. And I think for a lot of the fans, it was the same way. Like, I'm still smiling because it was so entertaining. You know, everything was great about it except for the injury list for the 49ers. Some people asking me if I felt like I cursed the team by going out there. Maybe it was me. I don't know. But too many guys left with injury. They didn't end up with the win. But people were awfully nice to me.
I happen to notice that. And here's the reason why. If anybody here follows me on Twitter at Field Yates, I got roughly six separate photos of people taking a photo with Stefania gifting her a glass of wine. So somebody really enjoyed herself.
You know, they know how to tailgate in the Bay Area. It's not like the burgers and brats. I think I posted on my Insta story. Like, I even met up with my brother there. He was with the group. And they had, like, six bottles. The wine took up all the space on the table. And then there was, like, charcuterie and cheese and hummus. I'm like, this is so NorCal.
Oh, my God. I was going to say, there are Chiefs and Packers fans right now that are just vomiting thinking about the idea of a tailgate based around wine and charcuterie.
I grew up at the Vet, too. So yeah. I grew up at the Vet, like, on train tracks.
Like boiled hot dogs,
big,
right?
Just hot dogs. It was really chili and burgers. I mean, it was pretty much just that. At 8 in the morning, just house and burgers and
77
soda,
degrees,
water.
77
yeah, it must
degrees.
Be nice.
Which, a little bit of math here for me. It's only 67 degrees warmer than it is today in Bristol. We have reached winter here in Connecticut. Most of you care not about that news. So let's talk about some football.
Rewind. Fantasy news from the National Football League.
This is the Instant Replay.
All right, Stefania is back, which means we get lots of injuries to get into. So, Stefania, you mentioned the 49ers are banged up, and let's begin in that game, just the other side of it. Tyler Lockett left this game late. I'll be honest with you. Because there was so much going on, it was hard to keep track of the injuries during that game. And because Russell Wilson is so brilliant, sometimes it feels like he can do it with anybody out there. But Tyler Lockett did leave that game late, and as of the time that we're recording this, Stefania, he may still not have returned to Seattle because he's been in a Bay Area hospital.
Right. He stayed there for a couple nights. I think people wondered what happened. How could you have that from a bruise? Because what we heard was a shin bruise. And I'll explain this. So he had a lot of swelling, which concerned them, because in the lower leg, when you have a lot of swelling, it's really, if you look at where your shin bone is, there's not a lot of extra tissue there. There's not a lot of room for the swelling to dissipate. And the problem is, if you get too much swelling locally in the soft tissue there, you can develop what's called a compartment syndrome. And if the pressure within those compartments gets too high, they can have to do an emergency procedure. It's called a fasciotomy, where they release the fascia and basically let that fluid out to release the pressure. Because sustained pressure can cause tissue damage, nerve damage, and ultimately soft tissue death. So if you wonder, like, why was it so serious to be in the hospital? It was so they could monitor the pressures in his lower leg. Now, the good news is no procedure required. He is doing better. But the feeling was they wanted to keep him there and monitor that throughout the next couple of days. Pete Carroll did say, though, that he expects him to potentially be available for their next game in Philadelphia. They benefit from the bye this week. So he'll have 2 weeks to recover.
We'll track this one much more next week when they are back to their regular practice routine. Wouldn't surprise me, given how late their bye week is, that if they have a very quiet week for their players this week with minimal practice opportunities, if any. Emmanuel Sanders left that game early as well. Stefania, obviously you were at the game, so you didn't have as much sort of access to what the sideline reports were saying, but pretty much immediately after Emmanuel Sanders left the game, he knew something was wrong. He grabbed his ribs as he was walking off the field. He told Lisa Saunders, sort of mouthed to her, or maybe, excuse me, I believe she saw him mouthing to other players, something to the effect of, I'm done. And he was done for the game. The question was,
we heard that, and they ruled him out pretty quickly. And when he grabbed his side, if you think back to like Julian Edelman, sort of that clutching the side, you immediately know, so they know the rib is hurt, but there's still a question, is it the rib bone itself or the rib cartilage? Now, this has been reported to be a rib cartilage injury for Emmanuel Sanders. And the reason that matters is because cartilage is really slow to heal. So it's one of those things where it can be painful for a long time. We've seen Julian Edelman have pain with this. Now, he has continued to play. They're not all the same, but you can often play with this type of injury once you get to a certain point of managing the symptoms. But it can be problematic up and down. So right now, I would say this is just going to be a week-to-week situation with Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan called him a game-time decision already for Sunday in his Tuesday press conference. Mike, obviously, if Emmanuel Sanders plays, we feel relatively confident in him given how well he's played with the 49ers. But it would open the door potentially to Deebo Samuel, who we talked about on yesterday's show as a waiver out of the week.
No question about it. He looked the part, right? It kind of reminds me, and I tweeted this the other day, kind of reminds me of Michael Gallup last season, right? Where it took a trade for a one for the rookie mid-round or the day two pick to kind of step in as a full-time player and start to emerge. Maybe some pressure off because he was kind of treated a little bit like the number one early on. Yeah. Didn't go too well. They made the trade. Now he looks better. So, I mean, Sanders went out and suddenly he looked the part of a one and looked like the real deal. So no question. You want to scoop him up if he's on waivers. If Sanders is out, he should be in lineups. If Sanders plays, though, I still don't like him. Not yet. Really, like Gallup last year.
There's part of me, and I never hope the players sit just to sit, but these rib cartilage injuries are so tough, and depending on where it is, sometimes they're hard to protect. You know, you see guys wear extra gear like flak jacket, but it can be problematic to protect. And if they take a hit in the same spot, that can be like, that's it. They're right back out. So you come back, Emmanuel Sanders, we start him in our fantasy lineups. We're all excited. He takes one hit, he's out of the game. These are the things that worry you.
Yep. Small problem to me, that's for sure. Matt Breida in that same game, Stefania, again, sort of quietly because the 49ers rotate their running backs so much that sometimes it's hard to keep track of whether a guy's hurt or just not part of the current rotation. Matt Breida, same thing, was banged up in that game on Monday.
The problem for Matt Breida is that this is an ankle issue that he's been dealing with. And we've seen, you know, Matt Breida sort of gets banged up and mostly manages to play, but this is an ankle that's been a problem for him. Now reports that he's going to get a second opinion, and the feeling is that it's not necessarily a significant injury, but it could be enough to cost him some time. That early report coming from Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, I believe. And I think this is where the Niners have to start getting crafty about this. You know, if you have Matt Breida who's going to be playing on an injured ankle and not being effective, you don't want that. So sometimes it's worth it to pull a guy out and say, look, let's get this better. At least if it's not fully healthy, better than what it would be if we played you this next week. So we're going to have, you know what we're going to have, guys, is we're going to have all these question marks next to these 49ers coming into this game. You're going to hear game time decision, just like with Emmanuel Sanders. Breida could potentially be the same way, but I wouldn't be surprised if he misses a little time.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that one. Obviously, Tevin Coleman, the number one running back in that rotation, whether Breida's healthy or not, probably opens the door to some Raheem Mostert value on Sunday, but only a deeper league consideration. Hard runner, just the workload probably isn't enough to make him a lineup fixture.
Yep.
The disaster season, Stefania, has come to a close for Chris Herndon.
Oh, I know. No sooner did he start, he's out.
Yeah.
I mean, placed on injured reserve on Tuesday. Rib injury in this game. We were waiting on him to come back from a hamstring injury. So first there was a suspension. He comes to practice within a couple days, has a hamstring injury that cost him up until now. Finally makes his debut. I mean, he was active the week before but didn't take the field. Now he's active and plays, out with a rib injury, done for the year.
We're so excited about this player. And this is certainly not the end of anything for Chris Herndon. You just hope that when a player deals with a lot of adverse circumstances this early on in his career, that it doesn't derail the overall trajectory and improvement of this player, because he is talented. We saw it last year. Last year, the adverse circumstances with the Jets were really bad. This year, they're not much better, but it's the other stuff that has really held back Chris Herndon, who is out for the season. Not the only tight end injury, though, Stefania. Austin Hooper.
I know, and Austin Hooper has
been... And Devontae Freeman, for that matter.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The Falcons, with two big injuries, but Austin Hooper's been really a revelation for them. And for he's done right by fantasy managers this season. Now out with an MCL sprain. And look, these are tough. They're usually, depending on the severity, it's a multi-week injury. But so I certainly wouldn't expect him back this week. We've seen other tight ends with this injury who've come back at 2 to 3 weeks. It's really a question of how significant it is, when do you get your mobility back, et cetera.
I asked this question, and I'm not asking it because I have information. I'm just asking this because I think it's relevant. He is 7 weeks away from becoming a free agent, or at least the final year of his rookie deal. The Falcons could use the franchise tag on him, which is certainly a lot of money. But if they don't, and I've made this point many, many times now, I think he's going to make the most money in NFL history for a tight end if he gets his deal done before George Kittle, because Kittle will then reset the market.
Right.
So if you're Austin Hooper, again, not that he doesn't want to be out there on the field with his teammates, but you have to be mindful of the long-term picture here. Mm-hmm. You can't simply be back on the field too soon if they're 2-7.
I always think there's two ways to look at this, because if it's there, I hear what you're saying about not coming back too soon because you want to make sure like that teams are confident, like, oh, he's healthy. But part of that confidence in being healthy is like, oh, he's back
showing
from this
it again,
and he looks good. Right. Mm-hmm, and and certainly if it's like, well, it was an MCL sprain that was relatively moderate, and he never came back from it, that would raise an eyebrow in the other direction. So I don't think we've seen the last of him, but
it reminds me of what David Johnson was last year.
It may mean that you really take all the time you need to get fully healthy.
Devontae Freeman, his teammates, Stefania, also banged up, and then we'll chime in on what it means for these replacements here.
Yeah, basically, foot sprain, and you know, these foot sprains have this wide range of outcomes, but you typically expect them to miss at least a couple of weeks, so it doesn't develop into a chronic injury. And obviously, with Ito Smith out on IR due to concussion issues, Brian Hill becomes the guy.
He's the main man. And Mike, many have told me this week, the Panthers have one of the worst run defenses in football right now. I think the stats have been a little bit inflated recently because Aaron Jones had 3 touchdowns this past week, which is just kind of an outlier type of game. But Brian Hill, just thinking ahead to weekly rankings, if you grabbed him on waivers and you woke up this morning with a successful claim, top 15 play, top 20 play, top 30 play,
RB 21 on my board. That's where I'm going. Yeah. I think you'll see some Kenyon Barner, of course, in passing situations there. Although he was equal, Hill and Barner were equal in pass routes. They only ran 6 because they were ahead.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you look at Hill's 36 snaps in place of Devonta Freeman, he had 20 carries on those 36 snaps and 2 targets. So he was clearly the workhorse. And I don't think many realize that Olesen, the rookie out of Pitt, was active. Yeah, he was active as well. He just didn't play at all. I mean, it was clearly the Brian Hill show. Now, maybe Olesen is mixed in a little bit this week, but I think it will be the Hill show with a little Barner in passing situations. So if you got him, I think he's a flex, a borderline RB2, depending on who's out for buys.
Sort of what I love about fantasy football here, right, is that we think Brian Hill is going to see somewhere between 15 and 20 touches. Let's be honest, though, Mike. How many of us who are evaluating what Brian Hill is going to be have a deep, intimate knowledge of the breadth of Brian Hill's skill set? The answer is really nobody, right? Mm-hmm. He's been with the Falcons. He's been with the Bengals. We've seen him in the preseason. He actually looked good in the preseason.
Yeah, and late last season, too.
Yeah, but we don't know. Yeah. We want to see it before we can actually fully buy into it. So it'll be really interesting to see how the Atlanta Falcons use this offense going forward. They reshifted their coaching staff a bit last week. It paid dividends for the defense. Perhaps the retooled offensive staff could also help them overcome some difficult circumstances with 2 key injuries.
This is Mia checking to see how many teams I got Brian Hill on waiver claims.
There you go.
So far, 1 for 1.
I mean, I added him last week in a bunch of leagues, so I'm feeling good.
Oh, you what?
Are you serious?
Did you know Devontae Freeman was going to get hurt?
Like, what are you?
It's a stash and hope handcuff. You know, it's just one of them guys on that list.
It's your fault.
We've been doing it. It is not my fault.
Mike, I'm
looking ahead. I'm just a little savvy.
Anybody else, Mike? Just go ahead. Tell us who else we need to know.
Yeah.
Who else you need to know?
You could
drop Reggie Bonifant since the Panthers got Mike Davis. You don't have to stash him anymore.
No. Like, give us a call that actually, like, you know, not about dropping someone. Who's someone we should add?
Someone you should add.
Mr. Infinite
You're
Wisdom.
Put me on the spot. I got to think about it.
Yeah.
I got to think about it. Last week, I would have told
you. Kalen Ballage is available in a bunch of leagues.
Listen, you said before the show, when people weren't watching, that you have at Mike Clay NFL muted or blocked on Twitter. If muted you were following that account, you would have seen that tweet last week where I said, hey, pick up Brian Hill, stash him on your bench.
Okay, muted, blocked.
This is on you. This is on you. I tried to help you, Field Yates. I tried to help you at Field Yates.
Underachievers and overachievers of the week, Mike, and Christian Kirk had a wonderful day for Tampa Bay, excuse me, against Tampa Bay for the Cardinals, but you feel like he was a bit in over his head.
Yeah, he was. 37.8 fantasy points, 6 catches, 168 yards, 3 touchdowns. And look, I was super happy to see it. Used him in DFS. We've been talking about him as a guy to trade for many weeks now. In fact, before he got hurt, he looked like a good player to go after in trades. Went down with the injury, came back, was still seeing heavy volume. So this was coming. At least a better day was coming, but he's certainly a little over his head. I have him ranked 26 this week. They're playing San Francisco, so you would expect kind of a return back to earth. He was kind of a regression to the mean candidate already. He overcorrected a bit, but again, I still like him. 10 plus targets in 4 games, 10 plus fantasy points in 5 of his 7 games this season. He's playing 92% of the snaps. He's ran 89% of the pass routes. He's handling a 24% target share. He's our number one receiver.
Yeah,
it's not Larry Fitzgerald anymore. Correct. It is clearly Christian Kirk. He should be in lineups going forward, even though he's going to certainly come back to earth a bit.
They actually played pretty well against San Francisco, not this past week, but
no,
the week
when
before.
They were a couple weeks ago.
In Arizona, albeit. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if they can come close to replicating that success. Won't be quite as easy on the road. How about an underachiever, Mike? And you could make the case that this player has underachieved, although maybe not, because many of us saw him as the ultimate regression candidate coming into the season. But Eric Ebron had 5 catches for 56 yards, and that's underachieving, Mike? Tell me more.
It is. His expected total was 25. He only put 11 points on the board.
Now 25?
Yes. That was his expected total based on his usage.
Yeah.
Had a couple end zone targets but didn't score a touchdown. He was the squeaky wheel this week, right? He had a meeting with the coaches, said, I would imagine, get me the ball more often, and they tried to do that. 12 targets, a 33% target share. He had no more than 5 in a game during his first 8 games. So again, I maybe this usage continues. Maybe they decide, okay, we're going to go to this guy. I don't think that's going to happen, though, because he wasn't very good last year. Like, he scored a lot of touchdowns, but his efficiency, his drop rate was not good. It's not good again this season. So underperformed in this game with a lot of volume. I know that Brian Hoyer was the quarterback, and hopefully we'll have Jacoby Brissett back. Maybe that'll help. But there's a little optimism. If you're really struggling at tight end, he's not a bad guy to scoop up if he's out there. But I still view him as a tight end 2, not a 1.
Yeah, he certainly was targeted last week. That's about as far with Eric Ebron. And volume does not hurt at the tight end spot. You know, hiring can be a challenge. As Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner discovered, Gretchen needed to hire a game artist for her education tech company. She knew it wouldn't be easy to find someone to grow with her team. That's why she went to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Gretchen posted her job on ZipRecruiter and said she was impressed with how quickly she found qualified applicants. She also used ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter her candidates so she could focus on the best ones. And that's how Gretchen found a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes and try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/06010. That's ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Time now for our Fantasy 32, which is one of our Mike Clay-based segments of the week. Also includes, of course, wide receiver quarterback matchups. That piece is available now on ESPN.com, as is Fantasy 32, if I'm not mistaken.
Mike. Indeed, thank you.
And Kareem Hunt made his season debut this past Sunday. The Browns play again tomorrow night, so this is very topical. Kareem Hunt's role, Mike, was notable to you, and I'm assuming it was a overwhelmingly positive reception based off of what you saw.
I would say so. I mean, a lot of people say, hey, teams should use a lot of two running back sets, right? It makes sense. They have 2 good running backs. They should use a lot of two running back sets, and they don't really do it. It's very rare. But we did see that from Cleveland in this game. Hunt played 38 of their 66 offensive snaps, and that was with Nick Chubb playing 80% of the snaps. So he still had 20 carries and 4 targets, did Chubb, in that game, ran 22 pass routes, which was the same number as Kareem Hunt. So he didn't hurt Nick Chubb as much as we thought in terms of volume. But again, Hunt was still very relevant in this one. 4 carries for 30 yards. We still saw the good rushing efficiency. 7 catches for 44 yards on 9 targets, which was third most on the team to only Landry and Beckham. And he lined up a wide receiver on 9 of 22 routes. Definitely like to see that. If he continues to get a ton of passing game volume, there's a chance for him to push for top 25 value at running back because we know he has a ton of talent. Also, this offense is going to score more points going forward. I could say that because their schedule has been so unbelievably tough and is much lighter going forward. I think they will be better. I think there's a lot to like here. The one thing I'll add, though, is that Antonio Callaway was essentially suspended for the game by the team. He should be back. Maybe he takes on a few of those routes from Hunt, but I still think they're going to find a way to keep him involved.
Yeah, I know. Have they not had enough?
Well, my thing with Antonio Callaway is that decision was made hours before the game. I don't think that the game plan alters
that's much.
I think that they were planning to utilize Kareem Hunt as much as they did.
Well, they said they were. It's one of those things, like you said, teams don't often do it. We were waiting to see. They kept saying they were going to involve him as soon as he got there. And the question became how much. And to me, it was the passing game involvement where he, you know, to me, that was even a surprise at how much they opted to use him in that.
Agreed.
Really important. Obviously, a lot of what we do is analytically driven, but there is a human side to this, and we'll never forgive what Kareem Hunt did. No one will. No one's advocating for it. It's deplorable. One thing you can certainly imagine, though, is that Kareem Hunt understands now that his leash on football life is short. So if the Cleveland Browns say you're going to play some wide receiver, you're going to play some fullback, which he did on Sunday. He was a lead blocker on Nick Chubb for several occasions. You're going to do what we tell you to do, basically, right? You're going to do what's best for the team. You can imagine that he is more accepting of that role than maybe a normal quote-unquote star player would be. Some star players say, I want the ball and I want to be used as a go-to guy. I think that's part of the mindset for him right now is that, like, he's appreciative of the opportunity enough that whatever they ask of him, he'll do, and we'll never get to positionless football like we have, so many believe we have in the NBA now, positionless NBA players. Mm-hmm. But in football, like, if you're the Browns, your objective, every snap, should find a way to have the 5 best playmakers on your roster on the field, which include Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, and
then
whoever else
later.
It is, right? Whether it's David Njoku, who's eligible to return next week, or other guys. Noah Fant, Mike, another player that caught your eye. Now, this is a good one here. He was on a bye this past week, so he slid under the radar. Mm-hmm. But this player, he's a massively talented player, Iowa bred and has had some flash moments.
The George Kittle
School
of tight ends,
right? But drops have been an issue this season.
Yeah.
Besides that, though, Mike, you're encouraged.
Yeah, it's really hard to get behind a rookie tight end in fantasy, right? It usually takes probably a year and a half before you start to see flashes. Think Mike Gesicki, for example.
Sure. Yeah.
Starting to see him emerge. But Fant's in a good spot here. He entered the bye 8th at tight end in routes, so he was already getting pretty good opportunity. His usage has increased pretty significantly since the Emmanuel Sanders trade, went from 69% of the snaps before to 84% after. He had 8 targets in week 8. Then he puts out, he had that long touchdown in week 9, had 4 targets in that game, but had a buck 15 and a touchdown. And look, when that trade happened, Sanders to the Niners, of course, we thought Deshaun Hamilton is going to kind of be back to late 2019 or 2018. Deshaun Hamilton see a big boost in targets and usage. That has not been the case. He's been a non-factor. In fact, he might be even less of a factor now with Tim Patrick coming back from IR, but it's really been Noah Fant who has taken a step forward, and all indications are that's going to be the case going forward. He's going to be their number 2 target in that offense. So there's at least a chance here. And if you're shaky at that spot or in a 2 tight end league, maybe shallower one and he's out there, he's a guy that could help you out down the stretch, I think.
One more here from you, Mike.
I was just going to say, on Noah Fant, what I heard coming out of training camp on him was that obviously they really liked him. They went out and got him. But that there were some issues with understanding and developing the route tree. So, like, the very straightforward routes, fine. And I think that might be an explanation for why running a lot of routes but not really targeting him until he could demonstrate that he knew where to be and how to be. And I think that it's the maturity of him across the year. So I don't see why it would go back down if he's actually showing progress in the area.
Interesting player. The Broncos, by the way, did welcome Drew Lock back to practice yesterday. So perhaps the Drew Lock Noah Fant stack, which many have been anticipating now for quite some time, could come
maybe
into
we'll
effect maybe down the stretch.
Yeah,
the Broncos.
I hope we get to see that because they're going to pick early in the draft, so they need to know what they have.
They need to evaluate Drew Lock and see if they have an answer or not. Damian Williams, Mike, played a significant role last week in part because LeSean McCoy got some rest.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I still don't quite understand it, but Damian Williams had a significant role, Mike, which Do you believe that it should sustain going forward, or are you more like me who is sort of the shrug emoji now going forward with the Chiefs running backs?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's spot on. You look just like the
guy.
I'm like a
fifth Bosa brother. How many Bosa brothers are there? I don't know. A lot of them.
19. And they're all good edge rushers. Yeah. If your last name's Watt or Bosa, you can get to the passing for sure. And if your name's Williams, you're probably a Chiefs running back too, because they have a few of those as well. Look, I thought even last week, if McCoy played, Damien Williams was still an RB2 in that scenario. Yeah. So even if McCoy's active this week and plays some kind of role, I still think Williams is an RB2. He played a season high 74% of the snaps this past week, had a 109 on 24 touches in that game. Five of those were catches. Obviously, that's appreciative in PPR leagues. He actually had over 100 yards and was a top 16 fantasy back now in back-to-back weeks. So this is two straight weeks where he's been a pretty reliable option. His efficiency, and we talked about this throughout the year, but it has been bad. He's under 4 yards per carry. He's only averaging 5.5 yards per target too, which is not good for a guy we expect to be a playmaker as a pass catcher. But it really comes down to this. He is the clear lead back in a Patrick Mahomes-led, high-scoring, pass-heavy Chiefs offense. There's plenty of opportunity for him with his receiving volume at the very least. So I think he's locked in, guys, as a top 20 fantasy running back, and including this week against the Chargers.
I just want the Chiefs to be consistent with the running backs, which is why, but I don't know that I'm counting on that, which is why I'm glad to be out of the business of Chiefs running backs, except for one league where we have Damien Williams. We, as in Chapin and I, we share a league together. So the stakes are high.
Yeah.
The stakes are high there. You can't screw that one up.
No.
But yes, we have Damien Williams as one of our weekly flex considerations, and that can be a little bit perilous.
I just don't know if I subscribe to the he's healthy, he's a veteran. We just need to make sure that he's rested.
I can't think of anything like it.
It didn't, the timing of it, along with the fact that he's fumbled recently and struggled, it's like, is it really just rest for the veteran? Or
I don't
is
know.
It, you know?
If it's a respect thing, and I would totally get that. LeSean McCoy and Andy Reid have been through a lot together. I'm fine with using that as a masking agent for what it might actually be. Who knows? But again, it felt weird to hear of a player getting a rest week in week 10. We're going to have some rankings conversations in just a moment. Sony Michel, amongst other players on the docket there. But first, for those watching in the live stream, check out this clip from the Fantasy Show. And remember, don't be this guy.
He's a brainiac. He's Mike Clay.
Can we fix that drop,
I know.
Please?
I see that Mike Clay has demanded his
I was going to say, who is calling him a brainiac?
My mom.
Oh. Another week with not a ton of quarterback differentiation for us, but we do have some quarterbacks who are in the second go-around against a divisional opponent. So I think one of the debates people have is, hey, the last time we saw Jimmy Garoppolo, which was, what, 3 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago against the Arizona Cardinals, they sliced him and diced him. 28.9 fantasy points. And here we are again against the Arizona Cardinals. Josh Allen had a very solid week against the Dolphins back in week 7. They now go to Miami. Does it mean, like, Mike, when you're crafting your rankings, do you put any stock at all in what they've done against these teams previously in the course of this season, or is it way too small of a sample size to even bother considering?
Yeah, I think it's too small of a sample. I'm going to look at what they've done overall and what they've done recently, and, of course, who the matchup is a factor. You know, so it goes both ways. How has the quarterback played this season? Are they fantasy relevant? How good is the defense against quarterbacks in this scenario? So in the case of Jimmy Garoppolo, hasn't really been a good fantasy quarterback. Stefani, the team's winning. He's done his job.
I was at this last game, and I think, you know, there were a lot of question marks about Jimmy Garoppolo based on this game. I think one of the difficulties is the rotation of wide receiver. It's almost like that inconsistency hasn't helped him, you know, because at times he had the best game 2 weeks ago, and then this game he struggled.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it's like a Jared Goff situation where when the situation's perfect and they're leading and there's not a lot of pressure on him, he looks good. But then, you know, they fell behind in this game and he's throwing the ball right to the Seahawks over and over again. So that makes me a little nervous, but I do like him this week. I mean, again, just focusing instead of just on the last matchup, the matchup specifically this week, the Cardinals defense has allowed the most fantasy points to quarterbacks this season. You know, obviously it's a low volume 49ers offense, and only 52% of their touchdowns have been passes, so that makes you a little worried about Garoppolo's upside, but I still have him QB11 because of the matchup, so still a borderline starter.
Yeah, interesting. Really an interesting season for Jimmy Garoppolo, and by the way, this is my get-off-the-lawn moment. Why are they playing twice, the 49ers and the Cardinals, twice in two NFL weeks, week 9 and week 11? Like, can we space it out just a bit more? It feels like it should happen.
It felt strange.
What do I know? Although Kyle points out the Falcons didn't have a single divisional game until week 10. So their season at the end is going to be division game, division game, division game, and more division games. All right, Sonny Michel and the Patriots come back from their bye, as do the Eagles, a Super Bowl 52, whatever. One of those recent Super Bowl rematches between the Patriots and the Eagles. The game is in Philadelphia. Sonny Michel is a tough one for me because ostensibly the Patriots have a very good offense that could score some points. Last year they were super run heavy, as our friend Mike Clay liked to remind people. And Sonny Michel is getting most of the work inside the 5-yard line. But Sonny Michel has not been good this season. He's been a little bit better of late. I've got him outside my top 30. You guys both have him as a top 26 play. Make the case for why people should be flexing Sonny Michel this weekend, Mike.
Yeah, first of all, the Eagles get Eagles coming off. Yeah, right. The Eagles are coming off their bye, so fine. And they're at home for both. But they get the Patriots followed by the Seahawks off their byes, both teams.
I know.
Speaking of schedules, that's a little rough for a team trying to get back into the playoff mix. Anyway, Sonny Michel, you mentioned the goal line work. And remember there was a point this season where people, that one game in primetime, just having a meltdown because he wasn't getting the goal line work. Remember that? He entered the bye number one in the NFL in carries inside the five. So even that night where everyone was complaining, still number one with 11 carries inside the five, has a 6.7 OTD. That's his expected touchdown total, but that's eighth highest in the league. He has six touchdowns, so it aligns pretty well. He's still delivering in that department. Remember, he only had six touchdowns all of last regular season before scoring six in the playoffs. And again, the usage has been very similar. He's dominating the carries. He has 144 of them. That is 112 more than anyone else on that roster. But of course, basically nothing as a receiver, only 11 targets this season. As a result, two top 10 fantasy weeks, but he's been 37th or worse five times. Also, the Eagles, actually pretty, maybe I'm making your case here, pretty good run defense, seventh fewest fantasy points for running backs, only 3.4 yards per carry. They've allowed the second fewest rushing yards. So it doesn't really set up great for him, but if they get to the goal line, he's going to be in there. He's a chance to score, and that's why he falls inside my top 30.
I have a suggestion, and maybe you already have this data. If you don't, it's a suggestion. We need to amend the carries inside the 5-yard line to the drives in which a player receives a carry inside the 5-yard line, right? Like, to me, is it valuable if Sonny Michel, he has three carries inside the 5 last week because he got stuffed on the 2 and then stuffed again on the 1 and then finally cashed in on the 3rd one? Like, is that three inside the 5 carries, or is that one opportunity to score inside the 5?
You mean like Nick Chubb had 5 from the 1 last week?
Right.
No, I've struggled with that because that's part of the process with OTD is evaluating that kind of thing. But remember, that was created to replace red zone data, right? Red zone touches, which have the same problem, right? You're going to see the same thing, only this is better because a touch at the 19-yard line is different than one from the 1. But I'm with you. It's just tough because on one hand, you're like, okay, he wouldn't have had the second and third opportunities if he got in on the first. On the other hand, they're three separate play calls
and they
by
keep
the offense.
Giving him chance. Yep.
And you should sort of get a boost for that. So I've struggled with that for a long time. I think the best way is to look at it both ways.
Okay.
You know, get a feel
for it. Yeah, that's
so
fair.
But anyway.
So we should have a separate category. There's got to be somebody
smart
out
it's
there.
Almost like a stat and an adjusted version of it, right?
Like that.
It's you see that all the time.
We're making the people smarter right here.
Making you come up with new stats.
I'll work on that in the offseason, I promise. I've done some preliminary work.
I also don't think part of my reason for ranking him higher is I don't think the Patriots are going to be dealing with trying to keep up. I think they're going to be ahead in this. It always gives more opportunity to Sonny Michel when they're not having to throw the ball a ton.
Okay. Al Robinson and the Bears go to the Rams on Sunday night. I just, you know, he hasn't been, and I doesn't feel like
look,
he's
I don't, 3. I know. 3, 5 years it's on my War Room League team. I'm well aware.
Allen Robinson and the Bears go to travel to see the Rams on Sunday night. Maybe I forgot that Jalen Ramsey is now a Ram when I had my ranking of 16, and Mike and Stefan, you're at 23 and 27, respectively. How much has the Jalen Ramsey shadow, A, taken place since he got traded to the Rams, Mike, and B, actually mattered?
Well, we saw a full-on shadow last week. Not only did he shadow Juju Smith-Schuster on perimeter routes, or at least a pretty big chunk of them, they moved him to the slot essentially full-time, and he just covered Juju in the slot as well. So I'm definitely worried about Allen Robinson here. Had a bounce-back game last week with 6-for-86 and 9 touchdowns. By the way, his off-target rate is now lower than it was before last week. Mitch Trubisky still getting him the football. That's the only thing he can do. Trubisky can throw the ball to Allen Robinson well. That's about all he has going for him. So that's good. 60 receiving yards and 11 or more fantasy points in 7 of 9 games. A huge 27% target share, at least 21% in all 9 games. And I lay all that out because I still think you can make the case that he's a top 30 play and a starter. It's hard to bench him because of that usage and the production this season. The guy's averaging almost 9 targets per game. But like I said, he's going to face maybe the best corner in the NFL, certainly a top 5 man-to-man shadow corner in Jalen Ramsey. So we have to downgrade him, avoid in DFS.
Anything to add there, Stefania?
No, I feel about the same. It's volume for me. Because that's where Trubisky looks, but I'm worried about the Rams. I'm worried about the pass rush affecting Trubisky. Just when you start to think that he's...
You guys know Stefania's doing here. Look at this. Stefania's trying to reverse jinx the Rams. Mm-hmm. Stefania, being the loyal 49ers fan, is I see the Rams sort of floating there.
I didn't say anything about the Rams'
distance.
Offense.
Oh, okay. Yeah, saying, never mind. You're
a
good
point.
I'm
saying their defense is going to...
Funny how the Rams have quickly flipped the script. We'll see if they're much... They are typically better at home, but... Offensively this past week, woof. I felt like that was ugly. I felt like that was Big Ten football, but it was the JV teams between the Steelers and the Rams. That was an ugly offensive performance.
It was. Though we talked before about Jared Goff being much better in that offense, being much better in friendly confines, warm weather. They don't play east of Dallas the rest of the season. Everything is down at home and local to them. So that offense could actually be pretty good down the stretch, I think.
Going to be a balmy 72 degrees on Sunday night in L.A.
I still can't figure out the run game there. And without that figured out, I don't know what they do the pass game. I mean, I still haven't figured out why Cooper Kupp had 0 catches.
That was a shocker.
He had a bye.
He had a bye? Oh, he just didn't play. I missed that. I left him in my lineup.
I assumed that, right.
Wait,
yes.
What?
I just assumed he had a bye.
I left him in my lineup. I must have missed that.
We'll talk more about wide receivers and cornerback matchups tomorrow, but a forecast to me suggests that Curtis Samuel could be boosted because, Mike, the Falcons defense has been very, very poor this year, last week notwithstanding.
Yeah, DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel just kind of flying right under the radar, and I know that because DraftKings does a great job adjusting prices to matchup and performance, and they have been behind on Carolina. We've been using them a ton in DFS the past couple of weeks, and it has paid off in a big way. But Samuel specifically is currently 27th at wide receiver in fantasy points. He has 4 top 25 weeks, only one better than 19th, so lacking some ceiling. But again, kind of a high floor sort of player, 6+ targets in 8 straight games, a 22% target share with Kyle Allen under center most of this season, has 4 touchdowns as well, including 1 in 3 of his past 4 games. Being used as their downfield target, a 15.3 average depth of target is third highest. He's dealt with a very high percentage of his throws being off target, which has hurt his efficiency, but that's something you could kind of see clear itself up going forward. And then again, you mentioned the matchup against the Falcons. 6 most fantasy points allowed to wide receivers, including allowing the highest yards per target and the second highest catch rate this season. They are 10th or worse in pretty much any category you could think of. The only disclaimer I think here is the fact that out of nowhere, they went into the Superdome and just shut down the Saints offense. That was the most shocking thing that happened that past week. I couldn't believe that. So maybe they did fix some things and it's not as good of a matchup as it's been. But nonetheless, we don't want to overreact to one game. Over the full sample, they've really struggled against the pass.
I'd say that's fair, Mike. I'd say that 8 games overtakes 1 game, but certainly a potentially favorable matchup for Kyle Allen, who is a potential streamer as well for those looking for a quarterback option with people like Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers on a bye this week and Matthew Stafford being iffy, at least as of right now. So a lot of tight ends, obviously, out this week. Kittle's iffy. Cooper could be out. You know, you've got guys like Jacob Hollister of late who have been useful tight end players. It's down, as it always is. So just a couple of names. We're going to go around the table here. I'll start with one. Players that are potential streaming options or add them and use them options going forward. Darren Fells, and we were just talking about red zone usage or specifically goal-to-go situations for running backs. And Darren Fells has been, say what it is, a tight end. He's been a touchdown maker. Excuse me. He's got 7 red zone targets in his past 5 games. He just won in the first 4 games. He's huge. Deshaun Watson's really good. Deshaun Watson does some crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Finds ways to get playmakers the football. Defenses are not going to be paying attention to big number 88 because they're too busy worrying about, easy enough for me to say, DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller if he returns this week and other players who have contributed, whether it's Kenny Stills, et cetera. Darren Fells is not going to ever be the guy that's going to be the focal point of the defense. Mike, you got one as well, and it is a player who's been consistent over the past 6 games.
You're right. He's been pretty good as of late. It's Shaq Doyle going up against Jacksonville. 3 touchdowns now this season, which is not an area he's really been dominant in his career, but he has one now in back-to-back games. double-digit fantasy points in three straight games. He actually has a career worst 69% catch rate. That's still top 10 among qualified tight ends right now. He's very efficient in the pass catching department. He's kind of lacked yardage, which hurts his upside a little bit, 46 or fewer yards in eight of his past nine games. But again, his usage has been up because T.Y. Hilton's out and Paris Campbell's out. We expect that to be the case against the Jags this week. Also, the Jags D quickly has allowed five touchdowns to tight ends this season. That's fourth most, and eight end zone targets is second most. So maybe that's good for Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron in this matchup.
Star Fanya, O.J. Howard did the Undertaker thing where he rose from the dead this past week.
Say, yeah, O.J. Howard is back, I think. Is it too soon to say that? There's nothing
right.
like coming back in week 10 to save your season. But look, O.J. Howard this last week, season high, seven targets. So it's, I mean, to me, that's like a commitment. Maybe they're making a commitment to get the ball to O.J. Howard. A touchdown, that's something we haven't seen yet this season.
That was nice.
It was really nice. And then he had a big yardage play with a 26-yard grab as well. So, you know, you saw a little bit of the mix of what O.J. Howard can do. And it's a nice matchup against the Saints. Opponents allowing 72% of passes when targeting the tight end, New Orleans is. So I think it's a good opportunity for O.J. Howard. And there's nothing like keeping the momentum going from week 10 to 11.
If some is good, more is better, to quote, I believe, our friend Kenny Mayne on that one. Usually you guys get Prison Mike, but today you're getting Jacked Mike. Jacked Mike, tell us Jacked about Mike. Vitamin Shop.
I will. Field, please. I've asked you this before, and I need you to listen, okay? I need you to stop sacrificing taste for performance when it comes to sports nutrition. Do you understand?
Done.
All right, done. The Body Tech brand has flavors as mighty as you are, like cereal-inspired protein and more, all powered by leveled-up taste technology and only at The Vitamin Shoppe. Now you can save on pre-workouts, aminos, protein, and other sups backed by the Body Tech brand's quality promise. Use code ESPN2019, that's ESPN2019, for 25% off your entire purchase at vitaminshoppe.com or in-store until November 30th. The Body Tech brand, no limits. Offer cannot be combined with any other coupons.
He's thirsty, Kyle.
Wow.
Pretty sweet. Kyle, what do you got for us on the social questions today? By the way, Not Cool Keith is actually over in Cleveland to watch the Browns take on the Squealers tomorrow night. Looking forward to that game. Thanks to Tom Carpenter for hanging out with us in place of Keith today and holding down the fort. Kyle, you are our social reader of the day. What say you?
Yeah, I got you. Brian wants to know if you'd rather Zach Ertz or Hunter Henry the rest of the way.
Ooh, it's a great question.
Hunter Henry. I'll make it simple. Zach Ertz, 12 fantasy points per game this season. Hunter Henry, 15 fantasy points per game. I don't think it's really surprising that Henry's been a superstar since he's come back. Huge target share, huge part of this offense.
Any disagreements, Stefania?
Yeah, I don't feel super strongly about it. Okay. But I'll go with Mike's stats on this one.
I went against an Eagle.
That's part of the reason, because you're actually going against an Eagle.
Probably the biggest argument against Hunter Henry, he hasn't had his bye yet.
Mm. So yeah, that's fair.
They have one more week of Zach Ertz. So that could be, if you have a tiebreaker and someone's offering you, if that's what you're dealing with right now, which is a trade, then I would consider that part of the equation is that it's Hunter Henry plus 1 week fill-in, and who would that be? Versus Zach Ertz. All right, what do you got for us next?
That's fair. Michael wants to keep it with the tight ends. He wants to know if Jacob Hollister is a legit top 12 option at the position the rest of the way.
I think it's possible.
I definitely have.
You guys are so synced with these answers.
You were on the sideline and saw him.
I felt every Jacob Hollister catch. I felt the score. Look, Russell Wilson's looking at him. There's no doubt about it. These former Patriots. They always, it just shows you the depth of what they have, because then somebody goes, you're like, oh, who's this star? He was just a guy with the team. But now I think Jacob Hollister, with their injuries, they have the tight end position. They're looking at him. I think as many targets as DK Metcalf this last week. Like, he's definitely, I think he's on their radar as somebody who can, and he makes plays when they need him. You know, the physical aspect of tight ends to me, if you're a guy who can catch the ball, like, if you have good ball catching skills, one-handed grab showed that he did, you're physical in space, and then you're going to become a reliable target for somebody like Russell Wilson.
I definitely think there's a chance, especially when you consider that when Will Disley went down, both he and DK Metcalf were top five in end zone targets, and the Seahawks have about 10 more end zone targets than any other team in the league.
Wow.
And Hollister has been seeing some of those. Obviously, he's been scoring the past couple of weeks. So I think there's reason for optimism. but I don't think he's going to be a top 12 play the rest of the season. And a part of that, at least a small part of it, is the fact that Ed Dixon's coming back from IR. They have
maybe
a bye week.
Yeah.
They have a bye week. He's expected back. Well, they said he will. I mean, things could change. They said he'll be back after the bye. Luke Wilson got injured. They're gonna utilize him. That could be somewhat of a factor. Maybe he steals some of them touches. I think there are 12 better options than Hollister, but there's reason for optimism. Want to name him?
Name him.
Ready? Okay, we got the core eight.
I'm only doing it because honestly, there's so much attrition at tight end that I thought 12 is giving him room to land in that spot pretty squarely.
Kelsey, Henry, Kittle, Andrews, Waller, Ertz, Cook, Everett. And then you start to get closer with Olsen, Witten, Doyle, maybe Hockenson. Vance McDonald's targets are back up. We'll see Eric Ebron. He's kind of in that Gesicki, Goddard, Fant, OJ Howard, Kyle Rudolph.
I think in that group, he has a chance for the most consistency. Now, I know you think these other guys are going to come back, but they were not. They were not being targeted in the end zone. Disley. I mean, to me, Disley would be the only one who could threaten him if he was to return.
Yeah,
he
the touchdowns.
Return. I know
yeah, the
he
touchdowns
can't.
Are.
I'm
oh,
saying
sorry.
That the other two come,
got it, got
that
it, got
does
it, got
not
it.
That does not look like a threat to me.
My bad.
All righty, we'll take it over to Todd. He wants to know if the injuries to Hooper and Freeman make Calvin Ridley more attractive a fantasy option or less attractive, given the attention that would be paid his way.
No impact for me.
No impact? I'd probably say a slight increase in target share. I have him 22nd against Carolina this week. Should be a good matchup. So I'd say a slight increase just because of targets.
Yeah, I don't. I feel lukewarm like Field.
I would like to have more empirical data of where, like, a tight end goes down and all of a sudden, like, one player specifically, like, benefits from it. Like, Austin Hooper was more of a super high targeted outlet, but he was more of an outlet than he was the focal point of the passing.
Yeah, and I don't think the Devontae Freeman thing really impacts him. It's just Brian Hill opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last question here comes from Graham. He wants to know what's the value of the Jacksonville receivers now that Nick Foles is back under center.
Comparable to what it's been with Gardner Minshew under center is what I would say, right? I mean, does it really change? Do we have any reason to believe it dramatically changes how those guys stack up?
No, I think if you watch Foles in the preseason, you'd say he likes D.D. Westbrook. You know, but D.D. Westbrook was already leading the team in targets when he was healthy. Or actually ahead of Chark. Chark's still a top, borderline top 15 play. Westbrook's a wide receiver too, I think. Again, I know he had more targets, but he was more of a short area target. And then Conley more of a borderline flex, during bye week. So, yeah, I don't think it changes much.
Yeah, Chris Conley's kind of a sleeper because he's been hot recently. But I think the wide receiver hierarchy is still clearly Chark, as you just said, Westbrook, and then Conley. Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of people are trying to ascertain what Nick Foles is all about based off of, like, a quarter and a half of football in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's just maybe a little bit too small of a sample size to figure out how he prefers his wide receivers. We shall see. Looking forward to having Nick Foles back. Another potential streaming option for those that are looking for a quarterback, and maybe more. We'll see, because he certainly was paid a lot of money this offseason to get that offense right. And as we know, Minshew Mania, rest in peace, did have some monster weeks for Jacksonville as the starting quarterback.
Any chance we wind up getting you dressing as Nick Foles by the end of the season? Or are you going to turn the table?
It's an excellent point here by Jackson. What I do want to do to emulate Nick Foles is this. I wrote a piece in The Athletic. I believe it was Zach Berman. Does a good job, obviously, covering the Eagles. Mike would know very, very well. Excellent reporter. And he wrote a piece talking about, I think it might have been do they already play Jacksonville and Philadelphia this year? Do they play?
No,
maybe not. No, they didn't play. Anyways, it was about Nick Foles and being missed. Yeah, and it was about how Nick Foles became like a coffee aficionado, he's like a barista for the Eagles quarterback room, and he now has like a deal with a coffee company that resulted of it. And I was reading something. I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, Nick Foles drops a little bit of butter in his coffee. It's a thickening agent.
I've heard of that.
There's a name for that.
Well, I think he's now with Bullet Coffee.
Yeah,
Magic Bullet.
That's something else.
Yeah, Bullet. No, I've heard of that though. That's what I was thinking. Bullet. I knew it was something
yeah,
Bullet.
But
yeah,
it is Bullet Coffee. Brew, something.
Yeah.
But Nick Foles, like, I want to figure out how to make my. I want the perfect cup of coffee, and I want to learn from Nick Foles. So
okay.
Anyways, that's my take on Nick Foles. On Thursday's show, we're gonna have takes on things that are probably more interesting to you guys, like the Browns hosting the Squealers. Again, for those who missed Monday or Tuesday's show, that is what Keith's daughter Allison calls them, the Squealers, and she is adorable and cute as a button. I'm going to call them the Squealers because she is my new hero. Wide receiver, cornerback talk, and plenty of injury updates. Stefania will have a full day of practice reports. to get caught up on and in turn catch you guys up on. In the meantime, he is at Prison Mike on Twitter. I don't follow him, but I think that's what you are, right?
It's at Mike Clay NFL, Mike but Clay I have to work NFL. On that.
Okay.
I think someone actually made that account.
I was going to say, or something like that. That's one of those accounts that probably
that's
exists
a parody
now,
account.
Yes.
Yeah.
She is at Stefania _ ESPN or at StefaniaB87 on the gram. On field. We'll talk to you guys mañana. Peace out. Turning numbers into dreams, that's what